This morning is State versus Allen. Good morning.
Morning.
May it please the court, my name is Jason Troya.
And I represent Mr. Allen in this case.
This is a case that I took over at the sentencing stage and of course was hired to do the appeal. And I was trying to figure out and unpack how it came that Mr. Allen was involved in a, what I would consider a consensual fight, but ended up being convicted of felony manslaughter with the habitual enhancement, sentenced to 20 to 25 years in prison. So you look at how it started back on March 25th of 2020. He and a friend are driving to the J&J grocery store, had stopped there for a while, picked up a couple other friends, and as he's pulling away, someone he's known for over 20 years that he considered a friend decided to throw a jab at him. Apparently, Mr. Allen, when he had parked at the J&J, had parked next to a vehicle that had some females around it. Maybe they were sitting in it, maybe they were outside of it, or a combination. And so Horace, unfortunately the victim in this case who had passed away, had yelled something to Mr. Allen to the effect of, "Hey, get out of here, you pedophile, leave those girls alone, and I'll whoop your ass," something along those lines. It caused Mr. Allen to reverse the car back up.
Big mistake, right?
What's that?
Big mistake.
Yeah, yeah. And engage in this confrontation. And there's a view of the facts that this scenario fit that provision under the assault in the third degree where it's fight by mutual consent. And we know one thing about that. I mean, it does lower the penalty from a class one misdemeanor to a class two misdemeanor. And I think the obvious trigger point there is that there was consent involved. So it got me thinking about a couple things. First off, how is this any different than, say, a professional boxing match or other professional sports where people are consenting to be on that, in that arena, on that playing field, in that boxing ring?
Does it matter that the victim here would appear to be fairly intoxicated?
Well, I suppose it could in certain circumstances. I don't know that it does in these facts, because as I understand these facts, it happened so quick. I don't know that Mr. Allen had the ability to perceive that and have that affect his thought process.
The victim was a friend of Mr. Allen's. They'd known each other for many years.
Well, I understand, and they drink together, used to drink all the time together, I understand.
Couldn't Mr. Allen tell that he had been drinking prior to the fight?
And I'm not certain I can answer that question. I know it did come out of trial through one of the friends or witnesses that Horace had been drinking that day. But I don't know about Mr. Allen's interactions other than those brief seconds where it happened.
Wasn't Mr. Steen actually kind of turning away with his arms down and then maybe looked back at the time that
there's
Mr.
video.
Allen actually punched him then? I mean, so it wasn't as though Mr. Allen had to punch to defend himself because there was no throw or punch being thrown by Mr. Steen.
You're right, and that complicates your classic, I guess, self-defense case. If, in fact, Horace turned away and that gave Mr. Allen that time, whether it's a split second or what, that time to think, oh, I no longer need to defend myself, then I would see how that would complicate self-defense. But it's also one of those things where it happens so fast, and you have individuals who are, you know, presumably hyped up on adrenaline because of the situation. I mean, it caused, obviously, Mr. Allen to reverse and approach him and confront the man who claims he was going to whoop him. So it got me thinking about sports, and why is it that if there's a death in sports, you know, the individual who delivered that fatal blow or the circumstances that led to the fatality then, whatever complications that might have followed. How come they're not charged with felony manslaughter or things like that? And I think it comes down to consent. It also caused me to start thinking about the State versus Carmen case that I cited from 2015, where here we have a motorist committing a public welfare offense, so no mens rea, and the state elects to charge that individual with felony manslaughter. And I realize, obviously, the facts are different, and we're not dealing with a public welfare offense, but is consent, is the element of consent akin to a public welfare offense where there's no mens rea? Is this the kind of thing where it should not be charged as felony manslaughter because it was a fight by mutual consent?
Now, this, of course, this wasn't raised at trial. Right.
You're right, it was not raised at trial. And so that's why I'm trying to raise it as soon as it came to my mind, and also try to work it into a later issue as far as ineffective assistance of counsel. But then, of course, I can see where, how could counsel expect something down the road, like in Carmen, to come where, it, I don't know. But it seems to me that, like I said, you have what arguably was fight by mutual consent, class two misdemeanor. Now it's compounded into being sentenced as a habitual felon on a felony conviction. And it just, it seemed very similar to the Carmen case. But I agree, I understand the facts are different. The other issue that came up that was objected to, and I've continued that objection or argument here, is the beginning of a question to Mr. Allen, who took the witness stand, about, it had to do with him talking to the police. And the word used in the question by the prosecutor was, and you never talked to police. Well, a couple things happened. The prosecutor never got to finish his question. The prosecutor was given an opportunity to try and explain what his question was going to be, and he suggested it was going to be limited to pre-Miranda sounds. The individual who interrupted the question happened to be Mr. Allen. But nonetheless, the objection was raised, and I think the prosecutor's use of the word never is problematic for the state. And so I see I'm getting low on time. Essentially what I'm asking this court to do, based upon the facts, is find, as a matter of law, what happened here on March 25th, 2020 was assault third, fight by mutual consent. And in addition to that, a fight by mutual consent, because one of the key elements is mutual consent, that should not be something that forms the basis as a predicate offense for involuntary manslaughter, the felony. So, and actually, I'm going to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you. Morning, Ms. Duffy.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Siobhan Duffy, Assistant Attorney General, appearing on behalf of the appellee, the state of Nebraska. Appellant has assigned numerous errors, and with the exception of one ineffective assistance of counsel claim that the state believes is unable to be addressed on the record before this court, we believe the rest of the errors are without merit, and we request you affirm the judgment of the district court. I'll begin with what was raised as a kind of sufficiency of the evidence argument in appellant's brief, which was that the state did not prove he did not act in self-defense. So the state charged involuntary manslaughter while in the commission of third-degree assault, and they put forth evidence that appellant punched the victim, who fell and hit his head, and later died from blunt force head injuries and complications from those injuries. The J&J video, so the security camera video, showed that the victim kind of moved towards appellant, and then he backed up. And that's when then he was punched. And the cell phone video, it's difficult. You can only see a portion of the victim in the video. It's kind of shot behind and to the left. And it appears in the first second, I had to slow it down to really get what was happening, but that the victim kind of is turned with his hand, like, kind of pushed away, and then he starts to walk away, and that is when he was punched. So the jury was presented with evidence from appellant that he was acting in self-defense, and they were presented with this video evidence that it was not in self-defense. And the jury found that the defendant was guilty, which means they did not believe that he acted in self-defense, and there was evidence in the record to support that.
Because they were instructed on self-defense.
Yes, Your Honor, they were instructed on self-defense. So the state believes that the evidence, when viewed in the light most favorable to the state, was sufficient to support the conviction, including that the appellant did not act in self-defense. As it relates to the fight by mutual consent, as discussed in brief, the state does not believe that the evidence showed there was a fight by mutual consent. As previously stated, the victim was kind of turning away. He had, yes, come forward, but he then backed up and then started to move away. The state believes there was not a fight by mutual consent. So in brief, we didn't even get to step two of the analysis, which was, is that an appropriate predicate offense? Because we don't believe the evidence showed there was a fight by mutual consent. I will briefly now, unless this court has specific questions, address the motion for mistrial that occurred. As appellant noted, it was during questioning by the state of the appellant who took the stand. The appellant made the motion for mistrial because he claimed the state was seeking to introduce evidence about his post-Miranda silence. As noted in our brief, the state believes the record reflects that the state had intended to ask about pre-Miranda silence. And just to give this court kind of the citation to that area, it was on page 450 of the record. The question was, you never spoke to law enforcement, interrupted. The appellant answers, I got arrested the next day, less than 24 hours later. The state asked the question, again, you. And at that point, trial counsel objected. And during arguing against the motion for mistrial, the state, stated that they were attempting, that the question was going to be surrounding the events of that night. That the context of the questions preceding it had been about the night in question, and that was before the appellant was taken into custody. And based on that record, I don't think it can be said that the district court abused its discretion in denying the motion for mistrial, and essentially in finding that the state was not asking about post-Miranda silence. As previously noted, the appellant has raised excessive sentence claims and a few other claims that the state believes are adequately addressed by our brief. I am happy to answer additional questions, any questions from this court, if there are any.
Was it ineffective assistance of counsel to not have raised the fight by mutual consent?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because for two reasons. One, I don't think the evidence supports it. And two, I mean, in addition to the appellant just kind of turning away, the victim turning away before he was struck, I think that simply the fact that there was a mutual, there was an altercation between two people, it does not mean that it was by mutual consent. And this court has acknowledged that in a 1992 case, State v. Crum, that was not designated for permanent publication. And the Westlaw citation is 1 NEB CA 2024. I'm not sure why it's not a WL. But that was a 1992 case where this court cited to a Nebraska Supreme Court case in which the Nebraska Supreme Court stated, the mere fact that two persons engage in a fight does not mean that both consented to the fight. And I think what's also interesting about that case is that this court was faced with the victim's testimony was that he tried to get away from the defendant, but he was cornered and beaten. And this court said, well, if that's the case, then the victim did not consent to the fight. He was trying to get away. And that if the defense witnesses who testified that the victim took the first swing and the defendant was then just having defensive reactions, this court stated that if those facts were to be believed, then the victim's actions as instigator nor the defendant's defensive reactions could be viewed as evidence of mutual consent. Defending oneself from an assailant hardly suggests acquiescence, and we note that the trial court instructed on self-defense. So I think that kind of maybe leads to this kind of tension where, can you really have both? Can you really argue it was self-defense and then say, but it was also, I consented to it? You know, I guess it's difficult. I think there are always, you know, cases where there's kind of maybe two theories that are maybe a little in tension. I don't think the evidence supported 5 by mutual consent, either by the video evidence or by any other. There was a fight, but whether it was by mutual consent, that means both parties. And further, even if it had been a fight by mutual consent, that is still the fight by mutual consent provision of the third degree assault statute does not take away a knowingly, intentionally, or reckless action. It simply lessens the penalty. So I think in Carmen, the real issue was, can an offense, a public welfare offense that is negligent, be an appropriate predicate offense? And I think here we don't have negligence. We have knowing, intentional, or recklessness.
But isn't one of the problems here is that once it was elevated to a felony, then the habitual statute came into apply?
It did, Your Honor, because manslaughter is a felony. I guess I haven't really analyzed that issue in context of the habitual criminal statute, so I'm not sure if I have a good answer for this court just off the cuff on that issue. But I think ultimately the state believes that even if we don't think that the evidence showed a fight by mutual consent. And so I think in the inquiry of, you know, step one, was it fight by mutual consent? Step two, is that an appropriate predicate offense? The state feels we stop at step one because the answer is there was not a fight by mutual consent. It was just third degree assault, full stop. I'm happy to take any additional questions.
Do you agree the record's insufficient regarding the ineffective assistance of counsel claim related to not investigating the victim's prior head injury from the same day?
Your Honor, I struggled. That's what I said in brief. I struggled a little with it because I kind of, you know, some of the details of it, it was sort of a friend of a, I think it was the source's cousin heard it from the victim's mother. It kind of seemed like a game of, you know, a telephone, as things often are, sort of with the video. We don't really know where the cell phone video came from. So kind of out of an abundance of caution, the state, you know, if this court wishes to find that the record's insufficient or that the record is sufficient and that counsel was not ineffective, I'm happy to take that. But because there isn't really evidence in the record of what counsel was told or what actions were taken to back that up. I mean, I know the forensic pathologist testified, and I can't recall, I believe that the wound was in the back of the head. I think the evidence was he was laying, I think he was with his back down, but he may have been face down. So I guess if the claim is that he had a knot on it, you know, if it was on the front of his head and the head wound from hitting his head on the concrete was on the back, then
that would be something for a doctor to.
Correct, to, Your Honor. Yeah. That is, I think, kind of why the state felt that maybe that is better left for a post-conviction. But again, I'm happy to have this court dispose of it in the state's favor on direct appeal. If there are no further questions, we request you affirm the judgment of the district court.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Case is submitted. We have it under advisement, and counsel is excused. Thank you.
Out of time.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I knew
he
you had
like
time
he was
left.
Coming back.
We're 0 for 3 right now. Sorry about that. How much time does he have?
1:26.
Thank you, Your Honor. I just have a few brief responses. First off, I think the facts here would be distinguishable from the 92 case that the state raised. I think it's important that Horace challenged him and used terminology, I'll whoop your ass, that would suggest there's going to be some type of a physical confrontation, or he's interested in having a physical confrontation with him. Combined with that, the testimony was that once Allen and Horace, Mr. Allen and Horace are face to face, Horace bends down, makes a lunge, or makes some type of movement that could be consistent with him preparing to throw the first blow. So that, I think, would suggest this was fight by mutual consent.
Let me ask you this.
Is
the defense of self-defense inconsistent with the defense of mutual consent?
I think it is. I could see where not under these facts, but I could see where there are a set of facts where it starts out as self-defense. And maybe there's an intervening break or something in the action, and then it becomes a fight by mutual consent.
But or can it be a fight of mutual consent and then shift to self-defense?
Definitely if one of them raises the level to deadly force, you know, from non-deadly force. I suppose there might be a scenario.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Questions. Thank you very much. Thanks for being here. Case is submitted.